Okay, let's start. Today we're doing Maseches Pesachim. And Pesachim, like Erevin, has 10 chapters. And like other Maseches in Seder Moed, it begins before the holiday. So the preparation for Pesach is, of course, getting rid of Chametz. So the first parak talks about the Bedikas Chametz. So simple Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos, what's the purpose of the Bedikas Chametz? Rashi says to avoid Bayura Bayamatze. Avoid owning chametz during Pesach. Tosfos thinks that based on our regular practice of making a bittul chametz, where we nullify all of our chametz, the real problem is not so much owning the chametz. As soon as you make a bittul chametz, it's finished. You don't own any of that chametz that might be under the couch or under a break front or something. The problem is shema yimtza gluski yofi. You may find a nice piece of chametz, a roll, a Kit Kat, or something like that, and inadvertently eat it because it's mutter the rest of the year. Okay, so obviously the preparations for Pesach. The Mishnayos talk about how to be rid of the chametz. What happens if you have chametz shel truma and how to burn chametz of truma together with chametz of chulin? Whether they can be burnt together is this topic of one of the most difficult sugyas in all of Shas. The end of the first parak of Maseches Pesachim. Discusses some very difficult Gemaras regarding Tuma and Tahara that are found also in Sota and Chulin and Chagiga, but it's really very difficult sugya. And when you finish the first parak and you start the second parak, you feel like you've just crossed the Red Sea. Okay, the second parak talks about the times for burning chametz. It's called Kol Shah, all the time that you can you can have Hanah from chametz and eat chametz, and there are different times for that. We have to stop eating chametz by a certain hour, and then we have to stop owning chametz. We have 1 hour after that, and the reason for this is because the various limudim in the Gemara, but we have till the time where we can possibly shecht the korban Pesach. During the time leading up to that, we can still eat chametz. In other words, as soon as the korban Pesach can be brought, no one, even if you're bringing the Korban Pesach later, no one can be eating chametz, and that's midday. So Bein Harbayim. So but because we sometimes don't have the time right, or if it's a cloudy day, you can't tell where the sun is. Is it midday? Is it earlier? So consistent with their arguments about how much time two witnesses can be mistaken about what time of day it is when testifying, so too, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda have these discussions over what the times for stopping to eat chametz and stopping to own chametz. Normative halacha is that the first one is the fourth hour, the next one is the fifth hour, and now with daylight savings time, here in New York, it's 10:30 and 11:45. The reason for the hour being an hour and 15 minutes is two things. One is it doesn't mean an hour of 60 minutes, but what's called shos manios, which is daylight minutes divided by 12. And on Erev Pesach, we usually use Magen Avraham times, which starts earlier, ends later, and therefore the hour is longer. It's a little earlier than the Vilna Gaon's times, and therefore, because Erev Pesach is the Chomer of Chametz, we use these, even if someone uses Vilna Gaon times, let's say, to reckon the last time to say Kriyat Shema, the last time to Daven, on Erev Pesach, we use the earlier times. Okay, the last time to say to daven is the last time to eat what's called sos mantvila is what the last time to eat, and then you have another hour to continue to own chametz. Okay, the next chapter talks about what makes chametz forbidden, and the general principle is whatever becomes chametz is the only thing you can use for matzah. Those are the five grains. And we know what those five grains are because Rashi defines them. He translates them into French in the Maseches Challah that says you have to take challah out of five grains. And there is an opinion, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that appears here as well, that rice is also a grain because it ferments when mixed with water, similar to what grains do, but we don't paskin that way. And the various laws of bittul and how to do bittul, and these are all part of this third parak that talks about how to be rid of chametz. Fourth parak is tangential to the Masechta, and it starts off to discuss the minhagim of Erev Pesach, of not working, and to stick to the minhag, certainly when you're in your town, but even when going to a different town, you should stick to their minhag if it's more stringent than yours, or stick to yours if it's more stringent than theirs. And as a tangent to this, this parak becomes a source for various minhagim, for really all over the place. And the most the largest section is the laws of Shemitah, which is this coming year. So keep in mind, if you want to know a lot of Talmud Bavli issues regarding minhagim of Shemitah, the end of the fourth parak in Pesachim is your address. Of course, you have a Yerushalmi Shvius, which we did some time ago. Okay, let me remind ourselves that we're learning in memory of Yosef Binyamin ben Menachem Mendel. We should have an Ilu Neshama from all of our learning. The fifth parak talks about, reminds us that, you know, in the Erev Pesach, it's still a regular day of service in the temple, and it starts off with Tamid Nishchat. As such, Pesachim, in the fifth parak, as well as you'll see next week in Maseches Yuma, because of all the service in Yom Kippur, that the daily observances still have to go on, Erev Pesach and Yom Kippur. So these two Masechtas become very important places in the Talmud Bavli for the daily workings in the temple. There is no Talmud Yerushalmi for Kodshim, so this is the best we can do in all of our sources. Okay, the sixth parak talks, it's called Eilu Dvarim, and talks about how it's very much Nogea for this year. If someone wants to really prepare for Erev Pesach that's on Shabbos, you want to learn the sixth parak in the Seches Pesachim. Talks about all the things to do when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, and what is Docha Shabbos and what is not Docha Shabbos. Obviously, the Korban Pesach itself is brought on such a time. The Gemara there says that they weren't sure what to do until they asked Hillel, and who unequivocally taught them from many drushes, and that he heard it from his Rebbeim, Shmaya Naftalion, that the Korban Pesach should be brought during Shabbos if the day before Pesach is Shabbos. And all the dinim of Korban Pesach apply. It's just that what could have been done before Shabbos is not Docha Shabbos. Okay, that's true about Yom Tov too. Seventh parak talks about how to roast the Korban Pesach. It's called Ketzad Tzolin, and starts to tell us some of the dinim of Tumah, of what would invalidate the Korban Pesach, and what invalidates the people from bringing the Korban Pesach. The eighth parak is called Parak HaIsha, beautiful parak about Breira. It's talking about a woman who's just recently married. It starts talking about whether she should have her first Korban Pesach with her parents or her first Korban Pesach with her husband. What happens if both of them shech the Korban Pesach for her? We learned that you have to be registered in order to join the Korban Pesach. You can't just knock on someone's door and say, I'd like to come in. So what we mean when we say, kol dichpin yisev yechol, whoever's hungry, come in and eat, kol ditzrich yisev yefsach, is really a formality. You can't invite someone for the Pesach at that late juncture. Therefore, some Rabbi Yaakov Emden suggests that maybe that was said during the day, earlier in the day, or that it's just a formality, just saying that this is what we were trying to be very open and hospitable to deserve next year being free and next year being in Israel. So the union of Breira is that the woman, you know, you can't eat Korban Pesach in two places. So which one is she supposed to choose? So the one that she ends up choosing is the one that counts for her. That's called Breira. Okay, so usually we don't say Yesh Breira on a Torah law, and this is certainly a Torah law. But the first year that the woman's married, the Gemara says that she always likes to go home to her family, and therefore comes the minhag that the first year after marriage, the new couple always goes to the wife's family for Pesach. Anyway, that talks about all kinds of people joining the Korban Pesach, his children, his friends, who's included in the registration, his avodim, tmeim, and all things like that. Talks about some of the exclusions. All the males in the household have to be circumcised. And the ninth parak talks about Pesach Sheni, whoever was tamei or was long distance from the Beis HaMikdash. That distance is pretty close, right? The entire Beis HaMikdash filled up two times, and then a little less than a third time And that's all the people in Israel who used to come for Tita Korban Pesach. So in addition, there's a mitzvah Le'ilah Regel to make a pilgrimage, right? So the hotels weren't allowed to charge for these pilgrims, and they would get the skins from all their sacrifices. So imagine today the hotels not charging on Pesach. Okay, the last chapter is called Arei Psachim. And it's all the laws of the Leil HaSeder. That's the perek that many young children learn in yeshiva. It's a beautiful perek that talks about from the very beginning, a lot of the laws of Kiddush, some superstitions about the number four, because there are four cups. You shouldn't have to do things in pairs, and a lot of agadita and esoterica. And then we get back to the workings of the Seder, the workings of the Kiddush and Abdullah, the workings of all the entire Seder all the way to the end. So when the Chacham asks his wonderful question and we just tell him, we're really saying, teach him all of Maseches Psachim ad Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Avikoman, which begins the last Mishnah in the Masechta. Okay, and when the Tom asks his question, Mazos, what's that? If you look carefully in chapter 13, that's really the question is asked on the Pidyon HaBen. So the answer to why we do a Pidyon HaBen is the same answer to what we're doing at the Seder. So Maseches Psachim ends with a discussion about the Pidyon HaBen, and which is connected, of course, to Pesach. So one of the first words that Moshe told Paro was B'ni Bechori Yisrael, God's Bechor is Israel. So the first mitzvah right after we left Egypt is the mitzvah of Pidyon Bechor. So that means that we can take our best. First is usually the best we reserve for God or His Kohanim. And the best is now we can reserve for ourselves. Now we no longer have to build buildings we can't live in for the Egyptians and reap harvests for people that we won't eat for the Egyptians. Now we can start to do things for ourselves. And we've built a Mishkan, and now we're building a nation. And that's where Pesachim takes us. Yitz Hashem, next week we'll continue on Tuesday and Thursday. I'll call the Seder. Have a great day, everybody. And continue to learn Mishnah. It spells the Lashon and the Shama. We all have a pure soul after learning Mishnah. And have a great day, everyone. Kol Tov.